this PCRS Asthma Right Care podcast series. PCRS is grateful to Trudel Medical UK Limited for sponsoring this activity. This sponsor has had no input into the content.
Welcome to this Asthma Right Care podcast in our series on asthma myths. I'm going to be talking about the myth that asthma is not a serious disease. I'm Deb Lees, I'm lead pharmacist for respiratory at NHS Sheffield, and I'm part of the Asthma Right Care steering group at PCRS. So we hear things like, it's just asthma, or it's only asthma, it won't kill me, or I only have mild asthma, I can't die from it. Many people with asthma dismiss it. They don't think it's a serious disease. They might be told they have mild asthma. People don't die of mild things, right? Wrong. People do die of mild asthma. Asthma affects 5.4 million people in the UK. It's responsible for 77,000 hospitalisations each year, and it kills approximately 1,400 people every year in the UK. But the National Review of Asthma Deaths report in 2014 identified that two-thirds of the deaths investigated could have been avoided. NRAD highlighted widespread issues with the quality of asthma care and a number of missed opportunities by healthcare professionals to intervene and reduce the risk of asthma deaths and attacks. Some of the key findings of NRAD include 46% of asthma deaths could have been avoided if guidelines had been implemented and followed. Key elements of routine care were not received. For example, only 23% of people were provided with a personalised asthma action plan. 43% had no evidence of an asthma review in the last year of their life. There was evidence of excessive prescribing of reliever medication. 39% of those who died received more than 12 SABA in the year before they died. 4% received more than 50 SABAs. And there was evidence of underprescribing of preventive medication. 45% of people who died from asthma did not call for or receive medical assistance in their final fatal attack. Some of these may have been sudden severe attacks, but it's more likely that patients simply did not know how to recognise the danger signals of a severe attack. This is supported by the fact that 77% of people had no evidence of being provided with a personalised asthma action plan, detailing how to recognise danger signals, how to manage an emergency, and when to call for help. NRAD exposed an apparent complacency with respect to asthma care in the UK, and really should have served as a wake-up call to healthcare professionals and patients alike to take asthma more seriously. But 8 years on from NRAD, and the picture still continues to look bleak. Asthma deaths continue to rise. In 2018, Asthma UK analysed asthma deaths in the UK and noted that they were the highest they had been in a decade. It appears that the severity of asthma is defined by the amount of medication a patient is prescribed rather than the amount of medication that is actually required to control asthma. And now I'm pleased to introduce a special guest, Dr. Mark Levy, who is clinical lead for the National Review of Asthma Deaths, to give us an insight into some real cases.
Thank you, Deb, for your introduction and for including me in this podcast. I'm very grateful. When we did the National Review of Asthma Deaths, we were very surprised to discover that over two-thirds of the deaths were actually preventable or potentially preventable. Now, the UK are still in a position where we have the highest childhood asthma deaths in the whole of Europe. And worldwide, we have the fourth highest number of deaths in the 5 to 24-year-olds. And so I've spent my professional life trying to understand why the UK asthma outcomes are so bad. And from my experience, both in the NRAD and also as an expert witness in the asthma death inquest subsequently, and as a clinician working in practice, I am going to share some key messages with your guests this afternoon. Now, asthma in the UK is treated very largely as if it's an acute illness. And we all know it's a chronic illness, and yet people are treated with acute asthma attacks, both in hospital and in primary care, and then sent home on exactly the same treatment they came in on without having a formal asthma review afterwards. Now, asthma attacks are really a signal that something serious has gone wrong. And what is needed is a trained individual to assess these patients after their attacks, to identify and deal with any modifiable risk factors. For anyone that's not familiar with these, they're listed very nicely in Table 2.2 in the GINA strategy document. Now, I'm going to tell you about three cases where I was expert witness for the coroner. And these are all in the public domain. The details are on the Chief Coroner's website, and I'm not breaching any confidentiality. In fact, I have permission from the families to talk about them. Now, Tamara Mills had 47 asthma attacks in her last 4.5 years before she died just before her 14th birthday. Now, Tamara was never referred to an asthma specialist, despite even having had 6 admissions for asthma in her last year of life. She was also prescribed 50 short-acting beta agonist inhalers in her last year of life. And we know somebody with well-controlled asthma would need less than 1 in a year. Sophie Holman had 48 attacks in her short 10 years of life without being seen by someone with asthma expertise. And in fact, the hospital discharged her from care on 3 occasions because her parents didn't bring her in to outpatient appointments. So instead of referring her to a safeguarding team, they sent her back to the practice. And in her final fatal attack, she was sent home by her GP with a prescription for short-acting beta agonist inhaler, 10 puffs every four hours, and a written prescription for prednisolone, which the family never collected. And that poor child died only being treated with salbutamol in her last attack. And Michael Urelli, who died at the age of 9 after being seen 11 times in his last 8 months of life, was discharged from a teaching hospital before his attack had properly resolved, and he died 5 days later. So in my view, people with asthma have a right to have their chronic disease cared for by somebody who is appropriately trained. And my 3 final messages are really, for hospitals and practices, please refer anybody who's had more than 1 asthma attack to a specialist. And that is something which is a matter of urgency. Secondly, for primary care healthcare professionals, do not delegate asthma care to anyone who is inappropriately trained. And sadly, this is something that's happening more and more nowadays. And finally, an asthma review should not be seen as a tick box exercise. An asthma review is an opportunity to identify modifiable risk factors and to optimize care. And as I said, there's a list of modifiable risk factors in Table 2.2 in the GINA strategy document. Thank you very much for giving me an opportunity to say my piece.
Thank you, Dr. Levy. So why is asthma still not taken seriously? For most GPs, missing a diagnosis of meningococcal septicemia fills them with dread. Fortunately, due to high-profile media and NHS campaigns, death rates continue to fall. And between 2019 and 2020, there were 30 deaths from meningococcal septicemia. Compare this to the 1,400 deaths per year I've already mentioned for asthma in the same time frame. As clinicians, are we taking the symptoms of an asthma attack or worsening asthma control or simply poor asthma control as seriously as someone presenting with a rash or an unexplained high temperature? And if not, why not? As clinicians, we need to avoid perpetuating the myth that asthma is not a serious disease. It's definitely not only asthma, and something that can kill is certainly not mild. Many patients have come to accept asthma symptoms as normal. They expect to cough or to have tightness of the chest or to be wheezy. They think that waking up at night is a normal part of life with asthma and that it should just be accepted. One study showed that 26% of asthma patients reported symptoms daily or most days in the past 4 weeks, but most patients still perceived their asthma to be well or completely controlled despite these symptoms. This indicates that they had low expectations of their long-term asthma management. Another study showed that even though patients may have regular maintenance therapy, many still have inadequately controlled asthma. That study showed that although patients may recognise worsening asthma and adjust their medication during episodes of worsening, they may often do this in an inappropriate manner, which represents a window of missed opportunity. But we know that asthma is a reversible disease. BTS guidelines state that the aim of asthma management is to obtain complete control of the disease. And complete control of asthma can be defined as no daytime symptoms, no nighttime waking, no limitation on activities, no asthma attacks, and little or no SABA use. And studies have shown that most people with asthma, this level of control can be achieved with moderate levels of maintenance treatment. We need to move away from an acceptance that asthma symptoms are normal. Another indicator that asthma isn't taken seriously and that there may be a gap in knowledge is that adherence to preventative medication is really low. Link this to what's already been said about NRAD reports and the underprescribing of preventive medication seen in that review. We wouldn't dream of not explaining the risks of poorly controlled diabetes to a diabetic patient and highlighting the long-term importance of good control and encouraging adherence to regular medication. All diabetics know about foot damage, eye damage, kidney damage, etc. But how many asthma patients do we tell that poorly controlled asthma and poor compliance to regular medication has its own long-term risks? Asthma is an inflammatory airways disease. Repeated episodes of inflammation lead to airway remodeling, which eventually leads to irreversible airways disease and persistent symptoms that can be no longer reversed. No clinician would prescribe GTN spray for chest pain several times a day. Patients are encouraged to take regular preventative medication and only use GTN in an emergency. If someone was using 7 puffs of GTN spray a day, you would probably be calling an ambulance. So why is it okay to prescribe 7 puffs of salbutamol a day for asthma? That's one salbutamol inhaler a month, by the way. It's time we started thinking about asthma in the same way. Use of salbutamol should be seen as a sign that something is not right, not just a normal part of asthma. It's time we start giving asthma time to ensure the right maintenance treatments are chosen, and that patient understands what each of their inhalers does and the importance of regular maintenance treatment. Time to check the patient is using their inhaler correctly. Time to check they are adherent to their medication. Time for regular thorough reviews so that we can improve patient outcomes, reduce hospitalizations, and ultimately save lives. People with all severities of asthma can have an asthma attack and can die of their asthma. Inflammation exists in the airways in mild, moderate, and severe disease and should therefore always be treated with an anti-inflammatory medication. We wouldn't treat rheumatoid arthritis with just paracetamol, would we? I think, you know, that might help the pain, but it won't do anything for the underlying disease. Salbutamol might help breathlessness, but it won't treat the underlying inflammation in the airways. Regular use of salbutamol can cause tremors, headache, increased heart rate, palpitations, and muscle cramps. Rebound hyperresponsiveness and downregulation of beta receptors can become problematic, ultimately decreasing the bronchodilator response. High use of short-acting beta agonists are associated with adverse clinical outcomes. People using 3 or more salbutamol inhalers are at risk of hospitalization from their asthma, and anyone getting more than 12 is certainly at risk of dying from their asthma. There's no accepted definition for so-called mild asthma. About 30% of asthma deaths in the last 50 years occurred in so-called mild asthma. Severe exacerbations in mild asthma represented 30 to 40% of asthma exacerbations requiring emergency consultation. Patients with apparently mild asthma are at risk of serious adverse events. 30 to 37% of adults with acute asthma, 16% of patients with near fatal asthma, and 15 to 20% of adults dying of asthma had symptoms less than weekly in the previous 3 months. One large study showed that in children who died of asthma, one third of them had mild disease. UK asthma deaths are amongst the worst in Europe. Experts suggest the poor UK ranking could be due to patients missing out on basic asthma care and a lack of awareness of the seriousness of asthma. The rate of asthma deaths in the UK increased by more than 20% in the 5 years between 2011 and 2015. Meaning that the UK has one of the worst asthma death rates in Europe. This was according to an analysis carried out by Asthma UK, now Asthma and Lung UK. The analysis, the results of which were published on World Asthma Day back in 2018, found that the UK's average asthma death rate from 2011 to 2015 was almost 50% higher than the average asthma death rate in the European Union. Of the 33 countries in Europe, only five, Serbia, Turkey, Estonia, Spain and Cyprus, had worse asthma death rates than the UK. In contrast, Croatia, Bulgaria, Finland, Austria and Germany all saw a decline in asthma-related death rates between 2011 and 2015. But remember, it's not only statistics. Dr. Levy told us those real-life examples of people who have died from asthma. If you'd like a little bit of post-podcast reading, I'll point you in the direction of a paper called If It's Only Asthma, Why Are Children Still Dying? And I'll leave you with this. It's shocking that so many people are dying from asthma in the UK, but research from Asthma UK revealed that one in six people in the UK do not know or are unsure if the condition can be fatal. We need to shift this perception. Asthma can kill, but with the right management approaches, education and support, we can put asthma patients on the right path. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to keep an eye out for more Asthma Right Care podcasts coming soon. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. For access to more exclusive podcasts, please join the PCIS membership at pcis-uk.org/join.